Hello, Louise.
Hello, JC.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you, my artist friend?
Oh, my designer friend. I am very well, and I'm very excited about today's topic.
I know. I love it. Did you ever, I'm going to throw you for a loop. Do you ever remember watching Bob and Doug?
Mackenzie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're the Bob and Doug of...
Are we the Bob and Doug?
Yeah. Of the... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because so we start every show with... And today's topic is...
So except, then I can call you hoser and yes. stuff like that?
And if it weren't so hot in the studio, we could wear a toque.
Yeah.
But it's too hot for a
toque. It's warm in here.
It is warm. Anyway, sorry to go off track like that, but they were very creative artists.
They were. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, the theater arts is pretty amazing. Wide spectrum kind of genre for mm-hmm. the arts.
And do you know how they started?
How?
The CRTC, or the regulators at the time, so, and this also relates to today's topic, said, your show is great, SCTV, you need 3 more minutes of Canadian content to qualify. So as a joke, they said, so like what, sitting around with toques and lumberjack coats, drinking beer, and talking about back bacon? And they said, yeah, that's fine, whatever, it has to be three, you need 3 minutes. And it was a super mega...
Yeah.
Hit.
It's a defining thing for Canadians.
Yes, yeah, especially our yeah. generation.
Yes,
oh absolutely. My gosh, we have our own generation.
Do you remember their Christmas album?
I do. I do.
So funny. Okay, back yes. to the topic.
Anyway, so today's topic is...
Professional artists. When do you get to call yourself a professional artist?
That's right.
So this is a big topic. It spans a lot of different areas in both the legal world and the... what was that word?
Social economy.
Right. The social economy. There's all kinds of different ways of looking at this, but I thought maybe I'd start our conversation by talking about CARFAC yes. and how they define a professional artist, because they've done a lot of work on this right from the 60s. So CARFAC is the Canadian Artist Representation, and the second half of that is
the Fédération Canadienne des Artistes.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a national...
Fédération des Artistes Canadiens, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
FAC.
Yeah, you have such a beautiful French accent.
Oh, thank you.
It's just lovely to listen to you. You could just sit on the show and talk French.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure some people would say I sound like I'm Hinglish.
Hinglish?
Hinglish, because French people always... Well, many French people put H's where there aren't any, and... Forget about the H's where there are.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So, how are you?
Okay, I'll learn some of those tricks. Anyway, CARFAC, back in the 60s, established this collective of artists to really get some legal rights for artists.
Yes.
The first thing they took on is the copyright law.
Yes.
So that was something that hadn't been amended in Canada for quite some time, and they worked very hard to get copyright protection for artists, for their imagery, for their music, for all kinds of things that they created. It's the Creative Commons, right? So they had to establish this, an amazing organization, when you think about it, that brought all those different genres together to work together towards a common goal. I think that would have been kind of miraculous.
Yes. Well, and, the ultimate collaboration, really.
Yeah.
To bring all these different groups together. And you know, copyright is a legal word, but it's so much more than that. It's mm-hmm. about where does art come from, who owns it. And ownership is what this is really about, taking ownership of your work.
Right.
And getting your professional accreditations and orders so that you can keep the ownership of your work. It's a bit...
Yeah, which is, when you look at other professions, that's already in place, and their accreditation processes and copyright processes have been in place for many years.
Yes.
For artists, this is brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once CARFAC was able to get the Canadian law amended to protect artists, that was, I think, 85 to 90 was when that process went through the legal courts, then they focused on the exhibition right. And what that is the rights for artists to exhibit their work and be paid to exhibit their work without relying on the sale of their work.
Yes.
So that was a big step, because most artists were not given any, any incentive to exhibit their work unless they had things for sale, which made it really hard to make a living.
Right.
For especially artists who weren't necessarily creating things that you could hang over your couch in the living room.
So if you have a piece... at the National Art Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
They either bought it to show it, or they're showing an exhibition and they're paying Carfax fees.
Right.
Now, not all galleries pay Carfax fees. Not all galleries can afford Carfax fees, so that changes what is shown where.
That's right.
Right.
So a lot of galleries, especially smaller galleries, I mean, Carfax fees are $1,500 per artist for an exhibition of a minimum length of a month-long show. And then it can be split accordingly. If it's a dual exhibition, that would be $750 each. And if there's 10 people, that's $100 each. So, but basically $1,500 a month. Now, for most galleries, that's not possible. And for commercial galleries, of course, they've kind of exempted themselves right out of that. But for public galleries, most of them have signed on. It was not well received in the beginning, but by now it's definitely something that's more recognized. And a lot of artists won't exhibit in galleries that don't pay those fees.
Carfax fees.
Yep.
And does the Salmon-Arm Arts Center pay Carfax fees?
Well, in fact, the fee schedule is a bit high for the Salmon-Arm Arts Center. What we do right now is we're making baby steps towards
baby steps.
That. Excellent. Yes. And we pay honorariums to artists who have been asked to exhibit. We don't pay honorariums for artists who have proposed exhibitions and who have work for sale.
Yes.
So it's kind of an in-between, a transitional state right now.
Right.
And I
so
think
many of the shows at the Salmon-Arm Arts Center are proposed to us,
mm-hmm.
and some we go out and curate ourselves. So
right.
That's the difference.
That's the difference.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I would anticipate sometime in the next 5 years being able to do that. But of course, on a very small operating budget, that would kind of break us right now if
That's
we
right.
had to do that. And so Carfax, and I think that in a way, the fee schedule has become more than just a Carfax fee schedule. There's a number of groups now involved with that. They recognize that small galleries are not quite there yet. And they're applauding your efforts to even do a little, like a small amount, any kind of work to transition towards this. So
right.
even our very small honorarium helps.
And it's just like the music you hear on Voice of the Shuswap. Those are SOCAN fees.
That's right.
Right. And if you go to the library and borrow a book, there's also library rights, and authors are paid for not necessarily the usage of the book, but the fact that the book is included in a public collection.
Right.
So our writers, our authors, will get a small stipend every year based mm-hmm. on how many books they have and how many libraries.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is a social economy.
Yeah. Well, I remember hearing Randy Bachman on Vinyl Tap saying that he can just sit on his couch and collect $100,000 a month because of his SOCAN fees.
Wow.
But that's like, that's where that's at, right? You're producing, you spend all of those years on the road and giving every creative ounce of energy you've got. That's what your reward is,
right? That's
right.
Good for him.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know very many visual artists that are experiencing
no.
that, but that's probably the hope, right? That at some level, at some point in time, visual artists will be given that same kind of professional recognition and as well being able to benefit from people using their work for exhibition and reproducing it for various purposes as well.
Yeah. Now, can I ask a question?
Okay.
Okay. So is this something as an artist that you belong to, or it automatically represents you?
Well, Carfax automatically represents all Canadian artists in their work with as liaison with the government and with the legal system.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because most professional associations are quite the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
You have to belong.
Yeah.
And until you belong, you don't benefit from it.
Right.
Right? Like a Chamber of Commerce or the Engineering Association of Canada. And those professional fees, like a lawyer's professional fees, a realtor's professional fees, are incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
And the challenge there is those dollars are often used to lobby the government on legislation such as copyright,
mm-hmm.
Among, you know, many other things. So I'm already thinking that Carfax is a much better way to go.
Yeah, and I think there's been other attempts by other groups to form some kind of professional association that would do probably what you're thinking, things like engineering accreditation guilds
mm-hmm.
do,
mm-hmm.
and that is lobby for various rights. But I think that's where we're stuck, and that's what the topic today, why it's so relevant. How do you identify the professional artist in the community?
Yes.
Because only the people that are professional, that are doing the thing that they're doing, should be part of such a process that they pay their fees and get their representation.
Right.
In the professional world.
Or are you professional by virtue of paying your fees? That's a danger too.
But that's true.
Right.
I know. And I think there are some arts organizations that are like that. And I mean, there's some, like for instance, the Federation of Canadian Artists, which has different levels of membership. You know, you have to go through quite the process to get to those higher levels.
Yes.
But at first, you can just pay your money, your $75 or $100 per year to be a member.
That's right. You pays your money, you get your prize.
But it is kind of an interesting format that they've tried to start in mm-hmm. terms of you have to work your way up the scale. But there's quite a number of others too that you just pay your money and there you are.
Right. Yeah.
So now it's about, okay, how do we define this?
Well, you tell me, when did you start saying, hi, I'm Tracy and I'm an artist? Like what, where was that? You didn't start out like that.
Well, no, but I also feel like when I finished school, like when I graduated from university, I felt like I had the right to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily introduce myself that way because I didn't make my living with art, in the arts at all in the beginning. I had a screen printing business and I did some artwork for that, but
yes.
It wasn't what defined me. So it was a difficult decision in the early days, but I do remember coming across a number of people who were practicing artists who always said, oh, I have trouble calling myself an artist. I don't know when. And I would just kind of let that wash because I didn't have as strong feelings about it then as I do now.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder why we do that.
Do what?
Well, say, yes, I'm an artist. I mean, I work in the arts, but I'm not an artist.
Yeah. Well, why some people who are not artists can call themselves an artist,
yes.
And people who are very clearly practicing professional
right.
artists will say, oh, I don't know if I should be calling myself
right.
an artist. What is that?
I don't know what that's about with self-aggrandizing.
Well, like,
same thing for musicians or...
Yeah, well, and let's talk about designers. Yeah. Like, at what point did you call yourself a designer?
But it's quite recent, actually, because yeah. I have a background in publishing, and so design is... pretty important aspect of publishing because you're designing information systems to move information from one body, you know, intellectual product for content from one vessel to another.
Mm-hmm.
So, and each of those are different every time. So you have to design a new way through. But I remember thinking even 10 years ago, well, I work in design, I admire design, but I'm not a designer.
Hmm.
And then only... more recently have I come to terms with the fact that, of course, you're a designer. I think it was an aspirational thing. Maybe I'm admitting that I'm a grown-up now. Until I did, I was still wanting... I want to grow up to be a designer.
Yeah.
Now I'm grown up, so I am a designer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're all grown up now?
Yes, I'm all grown up now. And design is particularly complicated because there are so many different kinds of design. And they all have their own group mm-hmm. that you could join.
Yeah.
And, you know, decorators think they're designers, and designers don't like that decorators say that they're design. I mean, there's all sorts of challenges. So,
when CARFAC did all of their work on copyright law and the exhibition right, they did have to come to a point where they had to help define the professional artist. So what they have done is use the International Artists Association definition, which is one of the following. Okay, so pay attention here.
Just one.
One, earns a living through art making. Two, possesses a diploma in an area considered to be within the domain of fine arts. Three, teaches art in a school of art or applied arts. Four, whose work is often seen by the public or is frequently or regularly exhibited. And five, is recognized as an artist by consensus of opinion among professional artists. So there we go.
Yeah, maybe you're an artist and you didn't know it. And if you ticked off any one of those boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how you are defined as a professional, mm-hmm. according to CARFAC. And that's makes you... fall under the protection of their various copyright and exhibition right laws.
Right, and you don't have to join. That's great.
Yeah. So let's take that in, like that last one, especially number five, is recognized by your peers
mm-hmm.
as a professional artist.
Mm-hmm.
You said that is also something that happens in the design world.
In the design world. So if you apply to the graphic designers of Canada. There's a membership fee, of course. They lobby municipal, provincial, federal bylaws. They educate, but they also have a peer review. So you have to submit a body of work, and it's reviewed by your peers, and whether or not they find it acceptable or not. The other thing that's tricky about design is often a project will have, you know, 8 or 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
So who gets the credit? And I think that's really the knot that is difficult to undo.
Interesting.
For the design world, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and collaborative work is kind of the nature.
But absolutely. So how do you say, well, that's a Bruce Mau design when there's probably...
He has a team of...
100 people who worked on it, but he'll get the credit for it. So, and we're challenged with that too, because clients will say, well, that's my file. I paid you to do that work.
Mm.
What they pay for is the outcome. They don't actually pay for the files.
Oh.
So they'll say, can you just send me that file?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a bit like saying if you sell a piece and the person who bought the piece said, no, can you send me all the paint and the paintbrushes that went with it? So it is more complex, but it is an art. And, you know, where I'm going with that is you can choose to belong or not belong. But thankfully in the professional fine arts world, there is Carfec. And so they represent you regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing about the peer review, I don't know if that happens in any other of the fine arts genres, like in theater, music. I think that once you're producing and are paid for your work, that's that. You're a professional.
Yeah. And I mean, whether it's a formal peer review or an informal peer review, I mean, artists are also good at discrediting each other. Right?
Yes.
So the other thing that's important about the graphic designers of Canada is they have a code of ethics,
mm-hmm.
as does the American Graphic Designers Association. And if you violate those ethics, you are not considered a designer. And one of them is to never bash fellow designers.
See, I think visual artists need that same kind mm-hmm. of organization.
I mean, it doesn't actually say don't bash fellow designer. It says
number
it as
one,
a,
don't bash.
That's right. As a as a professional, you don't criticize the work of your peers.
Right. Well, that's definitely something that visual artists would mm-hmm. need. And I hope that somebody out there is working towards it. But yeah, it's something that has been dealt with by a number of writers, people who write on art and the profession of art, like Chris Terrell. I don't know if you've read his articles in the Opus newsletter and online.
Yeah, I know the names.
He wrote a book called Artist Survival Skills. And you know, he's all about the business of art.
Right.
Very knowledgeable fellow. He has written a couple of times on this business of professional artist.
Yes.
And it was interesting because he did say that he found the term to be watered down, and that pretty much anybody who walks through a art supply store can be considered an artist. And,
yes.
And it's kind of an interesting perspective.
Then I can be considered an artist.
Well, yeah, we went to Opus once.
We went to Opus. How fun.
Yeah. But really, in a way, what he's saying, he's being inclusive and saying, look, as a community, we are creative. So if you want to create, you are an artist. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an artist inside them mm-hmm. that is just itching to discover some form of expression that is physical and takes form.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. I mean, I come from that angle too. I want people in the community to feel like they've got a handle in every creative aspect of their own community.
Right, because we shouldn't be building barriers. I mean, we live our lives knowing how important the arts have been to our community and our economy. Why are we building...
That's right.
Barriers. And it's true. Everybody is an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I believe that.
So then does it mean that we have to come up with a different term to define a professional artist, somebody who's practicing and making their living from art, at least part-time living? And then at that point, this is getting very complex.
I know.
Because we could easily accidentally create a division. And we don't want to, I mean, you don't want to hurt people's feelings.
No.
You want them.
I mean, that's why the words, you know, you're an amateur Or you're a professional.
I know, and that's the, you know, the amateur thing is, if you actually
it's a terrible
talk
word.
To, it is a terrible word. Like nobody wants to call themselves an amateur anything, or a hobbyist.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh.
I know.
Or my favorite is paraprofessional, which is used a lot in the legal word. It's like you're almost professional, but not quite there. It's rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is funny. But on the other hand, I mean, I like to... use herbs and essential oils to heal myself of certain skin abrasions and things like that, but I would never consider myself an amateur doctor.
No.
And I would like to...
No, and in fact, there are rules and laws, very severe penalties for trying to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have better professional representation.
Right, but I mean, if I'm doing it to myself, then I would, like, I'm just doing it, right?
Physician, heal thyself.
But I wouldn't be an amateur doctor if I'm just healing myself.
No, and there's no such thing.
I'm not an amateur accountant if I do my yearly taxes. Mm-hmm. So why
in
is
fact,
it?
There's no such thing as an amateur accountant.
No,
they're called students.
Oh, interesting.
Right,
but if you try to draw the parallel, if somebody is just making art for their own purpose, for their therapy, for their own expression, are they an artist? Are they an amateur artist? Are they a professional because they're making work?
Mm-hmm.
If they're highly practicing, but if they're not selling, I mean, it just,
well,
if they're recognized by their peers, oh, she's quite the artist.
Yes. But could it be because of how the art is quote unquote consumed? You know, so no one ever says, I know, why don't we grab a cup of coffee and go look at some financial statements? Right? Nobody ever says that because a financial statement is a good that is, or a service, or a good and a service, that is requested and exchanged, and because you need accuracy, you want, you know, to buy your financial statement from a qualified, trained accountant.
Right.
But no one ever says that. So as art is not consumed, it's part of culture. It's something we enjoy. It's something that is shared. I mean, everybody listens to music. Everybody sees art. Not everybody buys.
Well, that's true.
The services of an accountant, and there isn't a whole community of people going, well, I really appreciated the work that went into those financial statements, but it didn't speak to me. You know.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in terms of consuming, we absolutely consume music.
Yes.
And we consume all sorts of other professional arts because we're buying tickets to events and and theater productions and ballets. And so there's a lot of consumption going on, but there's also a lot of sharing. So it just makes it so blurred.
Mm-hmm.
We can't quite make the defining line.
No. And maybe it's the, you know, the fact that it's a culture and it belongs to everyone, therefore everybody has an opinion, therefore there's a formal element of, you know, an art critic or a book critic or a music critic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, there are no accounting critics.
I think I want to be an accounting critic.
Would you like to be an accounting critic? Why did you put that there?
What's that for, really mean?
That's right. Don't pay your money for that. It's a good show, but it's not worth it. You know, I know, I'm being a bit ridiculous, but sometimes you have to be ridiculous to really uncover the core of the the question. And I do think it's because art is created by people, but belongs to everyone, because you can't have you can create a piece and leave it in your studio, but do you really enjoy it as much? I mean, is it private or is it meant for public?
Well, that's another defining line, because for some people, that's all they want to do is they just want to create and they're done.
Okay.
Once they've created, they're done.
So could you be an artist if you have a collection of paintings that only you've ever seen?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think so. I don't think that is an artist.
No. No. What is that?
I don't know.
What is that?
That is therapy.
It is therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it's not that it's not valid.
No.
It's just that it's not, you're not being a professional artist.
Well, maybe that's outsider art.
Outsider art.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole different topic.
Right.
Because then we can start talking about Banksy.
Yeah, but outsider art is a term coined in the 70s by a French person. I've forgotten his name. He called it la brute, like brute art, like raw art. And he said that it was art that was outside of the typical conventions of culture. And he mentioned you know, children, and people who are maybe in the, you know, therapy, prisoners, people in, I don't even know, insane asylums. I know that's not the right word to say anymore, but mm-hmm. yeah. So people have no, absolutely no training.
Right.
Merely use it as a form of expression or therapy.
Oh, so that's outsider art.
That's outsider art. Oh. And there's a big movement studying outsider art because there are things there we need to learn. And, you know, is graffiti outsider art? Sometimes. Sometimes not.
Right.
Right?
Well, graffiti is a whole other thing. We could have a whole show on graffiti.
Yeah.
Because graffiti is a form of communication.
Yes.
And if you start defining art, art is communication.
Art is communication. And I know graffiti is... you're damaging private and public property. But who says damaging? Honestly, some buildings look better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't give builders a hard time about building an ugly building. And some buildings are ugly.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
Some buildings are beautiful. I will not specify. But I actually think the graffiti adds to the experience of a train going by.
Oh, I love the train graffiti. Yeah. That is the biggest national moving art gallery.
That is, it sure is.
Yeah.
And sometimes might be the only art you see all day.
That's true.
Right?
You're sitting there at a crossing mm-hmm. and watching some extraordinary pieces go by, and yeah. it lifts you.
I know.
It does something different to you.
Maybe you should tell us about your idea.
Oh, okay. Well,
or I don't know if I'm letting the cat out of the bag.
I will talk about the idea. How about I talk about it when we come back? Because
okay.
just I want to talk about Banksy briefly, though.
Okay.
If he doesn't qualify as outsider art, but he does qualify as a graffiti artist, and people have had, I mean, he has met a number of the qualifications for being a professional artist, but doesn't actually sell the graffiti, except I think he actually has done a number of pieces for sale.
Yes.
So he's sold work. So I guess he falls under the category anyway. But before he did that, when he was just this anonymous graffiti artist, would he have been a professional because he was recognized by his peers?
I guess, I mean, we have to talk. Let's talk about it. What do you think?
Well, I mean,
there's no doubt in my mind he's an artist.
Yeah.
I don't care whether you call him professional or not. I don't mean you specifically, but
yeah.
I'm not even bothered so much if he thinks he's a professional artist
yeah.
or not. But I know when I see his pieces, it changes my point of view.
Yes.
Or reinforces a point of view I already hold.
Yeah. And I don't mean the difference between professional artists and amateur artist. I mean the difference between artist and vandal.
Yeah. Oh, artist and vandal.
Because he was viewed in the beginning as you know, just this revolutionary guy with a spray paint can.
Well, I think he's an artist who points out the vandalism of others.
Oh man, that's deep.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. We gotta take a break.
Okay.
So everybody out there is enjoying our about the discussion of the professional artist versus vandal. When we come back, we'll talk more about what were we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about outsider art. Maybe we can move on to, you know, the social economy versus the market economy. What's private, what's public.
Right.
I think that all has something to do with it.
Okay.
A lot of people see art on Facebook.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, we're entering a whole new realm of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you post a little image of something you created to Facebook, you have just given a gift to Facebook because they own it.
They do. Well, do they?
Well,
no,
they
know
can
what?
Use
it's
it.
Ownership and rights is two different things, right? So on most of our work, we put all rights reserved. So we assume that it's owned by us
mm-hmm.
and then we reserve the rights to use it. So I think the Facebook, it's not about the ownership so much as the rights to reuse it.
Ah.
Yeah.
So they have the right to use it. If they decide that something you've posted is appropriate for a publicity campaign, they have the right to use it because you've posted it.
Yeah. Self-appointed right to.
It's a very big, dark hole.
It is a big, dark hole. And that's why, I mean, and they're revising the copyright laws again. And I don't think we've even begun to understand the power of this social economy we live in, where everything is shared on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and YouTube.
We have just entered this realm. Mm-hmm. What? It's like really less than 10 years.
Less than 10 years.
That we've been doing mm-hmm. this and it's exploded. Maybe you can talk mm-hmm. to us about
Well, I mean, I think it's just a sense of what belongs to whom, right? Mm-hmm. And just like Carfax and professional artists do not own the art world, you know.
Right.
Nobody owns the art world. It belongs to all of us. Who owns ideas, intellectual property, copyright. Those are deeply important issues, and yet they're also very personal. So I have a piece of yours in my home. When people come over and say, whose piece is that? I'll say, or who did that? I'll say, Tracy. And they'll say, how long have you had it? And I say, well, I don't really feel like I own it. I feel like it's hers. I just get to display it.
Really?
Yeah, I really feel that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't own, you know, you can't own art.
Mm-hmm.
You can display it, you can share it, you can experience it, but it's not, it will never be mine.
Well, it's like owning land, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
We can just say, yeah, this is our land, but we're going to die at some point.
So on the one hand, while the social economy and the internet have drastically changed the legal framework for ownership and copyright and intellectual property, in a way, it's an ancient challenge. Yeah. Do we really own anything?
Well, and now we're at a population level too that we can't, it's really hard to separate out who owns what anymore.
Right.
Just because there are so many, well, and like you said earlier, with collaborative teams mm-hmm. working on things all the time, mm-hmm. we're so full up to the rim with just visual everything that we would never be able to single out certain images and say that belongs to so-and-so.
Right. And maybe it's the slippery slope argument, but you don't own the land. You own the rights to the land.
Right.
You own the title, which is another form of owning the rights.
Yeah. Well, so here we go. We're talking about the investment of your time into creating this thing, though, not the land, the art.
The art.
So if we can just get back to the professional thing for just a minute, the whole 10,000 hours concept, which mm-hmm. I think is completely valid. When you spend many, many years working hard to improve your abilities in your chosen field, should there not be that level of, and maybe ownership's not the right word, but some level of assumed rights
mm-hmm.
that no matter what the new social economy says, and it's cultural sharing and all this kind of stuff, that you still have some basic rights for that piece that you have worked for 25 years to perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the design world, it's the same as in the art world, as far as I'm concerned. You spend a certain number of years in your field working hard to get to a point where you can produce a product that is of high quality that didn't take you a year necessarily to put together, but instead maybe a month, maybe mm-hmm. 6 weeks to do this product. And somebody comes to you and says, why is that worth $10,000 when you've only spent 6 weeks doing it?
Right.
Well,
I like that Picasso urban legend.
Oh, the napkin story?
Yeah. A woman saw Picasso in a cafe one day and said to him, I'll pay whatever it costs for you to draw a picture, I think she said.
A picture.
Draw me a picture on this napkin. And he said, no, he's probably just trying to enjoy his coffee. And she insisted, and he said, okay, fine. So he took 5 minutes and drew her a picture. And then he said, that'll be $50,000, please. And she said, well, but it only took you 5 minutes to do it. And he said, yes, but it took me 50 years to know how.
Yes.
And so that's what we're selling, or that's what we're offering. I mean, I don't,
because
you know,
that's what
sales,
we've invested.
It's almost like a dirty word, sales,
in the art world. But in a way, we don't have to eat, right?
Yeah. I don't know. No, artists don't need to eat, do they?
No, and we don't need a mortgage payment or anything like that.
Oh,
my goodness. But
heavens, no.
The concept of sharing your abilities for nothing mm-hmm. is something that's, it mm-hmm. bugs me. It's mm-hmm. a pet peeve of mine. And it's just like, you know, people wanting to display artwork in their offices without offering the artist any particular
compensation. Yeah, tell me about that, because that always bugs me a bit.
Well, people
like
it's
exposure. Well, I can't eat exposure.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, how many accountants would you go up to and say, do my taxes for free, but I'll tell lots of people about
That's
you.
Right. Or I'll display it for you, but I wouldn't want to display my financial statement. I don't think. With a box of Kleenex beside it, maybe. But
a number of people have contacted me personally, as well as the Art Center, asking, oh, are there artists that like to put their work? We just want to show their work, and they could have it for sale, and you know, they'll get the exposure. And I have to say to them the same thing, you know, it's really hard for an artist to make a decision to tie up a body of work in a situation yes. where it's not an exhibition space, so you don't have people going there specifically to see work. It's not a sales space. It's not a commercial gallery. So basically, you're asking them to do something for nothing for an unlimited period of time that is providing a service to you that you would otherwise have to pay for.
Right.
So let's think about this again. And for some people, they're going, and they kind of get
and
it.
The light bulb goes off.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's very true of musicians mm-hmm. as well, right? We tend to think that art, because art is something that's driven by passion, therefore, it's a dirty word to talk about the money.
Yeah.
But artists and musicians, and they all need, we all need to share mm-hmm. in our community and our economy.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I mean, and I think legislatively wise, okay, we'll go with that. But in the federal government recognizes the value of the arts to the economy. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways they do this is by offering an incentive for businesses to buy and display Canadian art in their places of work.
Oh, how lovely.
Yes. And it's a painting, as long as it's Canadian made, mm-hmm. Up to a certain amount of money. And the accountants might want to chime in, but although after all those nasty jokes about financial statements, we might not hear from them, it's a write-off.
A certain percentage write-off?
Yes. And it's not like a pile of paper or a new printer or some erasers. The art you hang on your wall never, listen to me carefully, never loses value. It's not something that can be consumed. Maybe that's it. You can't consume art because you can't eat it. You can't erase it. You can't throw it out. You know what I mean? Like it's not like a sandwich.
Right. Right.
You don't have it. You pay for it. You have it. Then you get rid of it. Then you use it.
Yeah.
It can't be used.
No.
It can't be used. It can't be used.
It provides a service.
Yes.
Though, because of the sharing, the participation mm-hmm. in the interpretive and the, you know, the, you know, all the right. stuff in the sort of early levels of participation, there's services there.
Yeah. And it's unlike, it cannot, I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't depreciate. It's not like right. an office chair, as beautiful as an office chair
right.
might be, or a big screen TV. Mm-hmm. It doesn't depreciate.
Yeah.
It's an asset.
Yeah. You won't need to go out in 2 years and get the newest
and say,
one.
Oh, I can't believe they upgraded my piece from Tracy. Now I have to go get a new one.
Wait a minute.
Oh, and I have to get a new charger too. Yeah. Right? So that really is a very distinctive mm-hmm. issue, is the idea of something that can be consumed or made from something into nothing. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. Oh, this is a really big
wow.
kind of talk. Maybe we should go
my
to
head's gonna hurt
Ottawa and actually yeah it probably
yeah.
will
yeah, yeah. But it will have been worth it.
Okay, so I'm just gonna briefly go to another Chris Terrell piece of information that he wrote on one of his blogs. He was talking about when you define yourself as a professional artist, it's a bit outside of most people's understanding when you say I'm an artist, because that could mean anything, right? You could be a body painter. You could be a tattoo artist. It's not enough to just say I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And so what his recommendation was for professional artists, for people who are, you know, covering all one of those things, making their living from art, recognized by their peers, whatever, that they specify the kind of artist they are within their introductions. So mm-hmm. I read this probably a year or so ago, and I do that now. So I never introduce myself as an artist. When people ask what I do, of course, I say I'm the curator at the gallery, but I'm also a landscape painter.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so whatever it is you do, that's your thing. So instead of, like, just lose the word artist altogether.
Right.
If you're a master printmaker, I'm a master printmaker. Right. If you're a weaver, if you're a musician, if you're a guitar player, if you're, you know, it's time to be specific and drop the artist word altogether.
An opera singer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And composer.
And composer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful.
So let's be educational at the same time as being professional.
I'll do that.
Oh, gosh. Well, we all have a lot of words to say, though, but at least if we can boil it down to a couple of good ones. A
couple of things. Yeah. It's true. I don't know what. Yes. I mean, I think if I could have been an artist, I probably would have been an abstract painter.
Ah. Well, maybe that's something you can aim for in your next life.
Next time. Kind of busy this time around.
Yeah, a little. Yeah. And also, back to the investment of your time. That's how long it takes to, the 10,000 hours thing, that's how long it takes to develop a style. Mm-hmm. And a style is one of those things that becomes a value when you're entering a certain level of art production and people begin to recognize you as having a specific style.
Right.
And of course, I think we're long past the days of inventing a style. Like, you're never going to find a new Fauvist or, you know, like, there. It's kind of a, maybe it's a population thing again, that everything's been done, everything's been seen.
That's right.
It's just a matter of recombining things and doing them in new ways. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of run out of things to invent. But you can still...
I've often had that thought. Will there ever be another expressionism, pointillism, cubism?
I don't know. Because as far as I know, everything's just kind of modernism now.
Yes.
Right? Like, well, we had modernism and postmodernism, but... I don't know. I mean, maybe we have to look back, we have to look back at 50 years from now to see what this was.
I wonder what it will be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't know during the time of the Expressionists that was Expressionism.
I know, and people often say, well, I don't like, going back to Picasso, I don't like Picasso, because I don't like what it looks like. I wouldn't put it above my couch, and I always try to explain, you know, the thing about him is him and his peers, because there's a whole group of them. He's just the one who seemed to be better at marketing himself. He was doing things with his peers that had never been done before.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And that's why it has, you know, that was the self-expression that had never been seen before. And I guess we're all, as artists, we're all driven by some form of self-expression.
Yeah.
And when you express yourself, it lives forever, whether it's a blog or, you know.
That's true. Yes, it's true. Okay, here we go. Ready? And now it's time for...
Dramatic Moment in the Arts.
No, you're supposed to say, as the art world turns.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, we're still new at this.
Okay, as the art world turns, Dramatic Moments in the Arts.
Dramatic Moments in the Arts.
Okay, are you ready for this?
Yes.
30 years ago, Andy Warhol was doing a commission for Amiga, for Commodore, for the new Amiga system, and had done a bunch of doodles that was designed to push the Amiga out in front of Apple. So this is some pretty big stuff here. Never came to be.
No, it's true. And he was an artist and a designer.
Yeah, yeah. And boy, did he have a team.
He had a huge team. In fact, he called it the factory, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes commissions don't work out. Mm-hmm. And the artist is paid a kill fee and it goes away.
Yeah.
Or does it?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. This is the soap opera moment of ours. So... Guess what somebody's just dug up? A whole bunch of floppy disks that contain all of these doodles of Andy Warhol's works in preparation for this commission.
Wow.
I know. And they actually had to hire a guy with special knowledge of how to get the data off of these floppy disks. Because who has that anymore?
What is it? I actually, yeah. Floppy disks.
Yeah. And then somehow they got a video of him making these. And he was doodling right on the computer. So he's using a system that Amiga was going to promote that was like an art, computer art kind of creation system.
Really?
Yeah. So he was using, and so some of the images are actually pretty amazing. I see some of these things today.
Like, yes.
This Andy Warhol doing this, talk about being the first, doing this 30 years ago, and then these sort of, you know, up and comer computer artists, people doing these things today, thinking, look at the new thing I'm doing.
Wow. That's like the original YouTube how-to video.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It kind of is. So he's actually even doodled.
And when you say they found... Oh, they're gorgeous.
I'm showing Louise right now on my phone some of his doodles. So you have to go on this site. I think it's a UK. What is it?
Maybe we could put that link on the voice
Yeah. You know what? I'll tweet it.
Ooh, okay, tweet it.
I'll tweet it on SAAG Curator when we're all done here. So, yes, Andy Warhol commissioned for all of these things. The launch of the Amiga 1000, and the artworks that he created on these floppy disks were thought completely lost. So somebody did find them, and a team of people were used to actually extract it. And he even did a mashup version of The Birth of Venus.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially for this. And it's, like I said, it's stuff you see coming out right
still,
now.
See, it never goes away. It's still there.
Yeah. And he's also got a sketch of Debbie Harry in amongst them. Like,
wow.
It's, I know, the guy was
I know,
amazing.
I had to stop saying wow.
So you can watch the video.
Expand my vocabulary. So we can see it all. And who found it and who does it belong to?
Oh, well, there's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, an artist... his last name is Archangel. I only remember that because my kids are fixated on Supernatural right now.
Okay.
So anything to do with Archangel kind of says, oh, anyway, I don't know what his connection is, but he, is a self-described Warhol fanatic.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so this is the guy that must have dug them up somewhere. He found them and then has gone on to get these images and actually have them printed, and they're going to be on display. And it's just, I don't know, it's such an interesting concept that we're now talking about historic information of computer art.
Mm-hmm. Historic information of computer art.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's another thing in the professional artist world. If it came from a computer or it was touched by a computer, is it original art?
Well, that's a debate that's going on right
that could
now.
Be next week's topic.
We could.
What is original art?
Oh my God! I don't know if I want to open that can of worms.
Well,
because I know for all I this is my thought.
Okay,
this is our gallery's policy in Salmon Arm that right now it has to be a hand produced work by the artist in order to be original work.
Okay.
That means giclées aren't allowed in the gallery. They're not considered original. That means mechanically reproduced prints are not allowed. Only hand-pulled prints are permitted. And computer art is not allowed because it's untouched by the artist. But on the other hand, there's a lot of mixed media work where the artist is creating things on the computer and then putting it together another way, like collage. Yeah. And so those things are considered original art.
Sculptural elements with digital...
Yeah. So those things are considered original, but they have to be touched and manipulated by the artist's hand. So there's definitely a debate about that. And there's no, I don't think there's a firm, I don't think anybody's come up with a firm policy on it.
And I mean, that's the beauty of debate. It's a conversation that keeps going and going and going.
Yeah. But I've heard some people.
And I know it's hard for some craftspeople to be told that this is not art.
Yeah. I know. That's a whole other show.
A whole other show. Okay, now we got... Okay, so stay tuned. We got another show and then another show.
Yeah.
We after could just... that. But the most important thing is we all have a drive for self-expression.
Yes.
Right.
And we all... I mean, we do all have creativity within us. And it's not necessarily something that has to be paid for, but... Or even created... Or even used to create a product. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, too, is you can be creative without making more stuff in the world.
And before we go to the events, I would say a true artist is humble about their profession as an artist. So beware I'm an artist and this is a one of a kind, and so.
Yeah.
You have to be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of true for a lot of professions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
The
harder
the loudest
work to prove that they are what they are, the more careful you should be, I think. But...
Nice closing comments on
there
that.
There we go. And so now we're on to...
And now it's time for current arts events in the Shoe Swap.
We need another sting for that.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay. We'll work on that for next week.
It's a work in progress. So there's always lots of things going on in the Shoe Swap. Of course, we continue to have our daily story time at the gallery at noon, Tuesday to Saturday.
Every day at noon. It's lovely to see grown-ups sitting on cushions listening to stories.
I know, it's funny.
So, switch up your lunch hour today.
Yeah.
Don't go to that place, the green and yellow place for the sandwich. Come to the gallery.
So yesterday I happened to have a tour in, and I just thought it was funny that the cushions are piled up in the middle of the carpet, and people are supposed to pick out the cushions and sit on them. But one girl just sat in the pile.
The whole pile.
Yeah, she's like, that's good. This looks good.
Awesome. Boink. I get the
there
whole
she is.
Pile. Yeah.
It was kind of sweet. And on Saturdays, the story time is especially for children. So that's a good thing to bring your family.
And it's Artie from that.
Yeah, this Saturday, Artie from the library.
Yeah, we can't say enough about her. She can sing, she can read. She's absolutely wonderful.
It's because she grew up in a family of opera stars.
There we go.
Yeah. See, that's how important it is to have an artist in your family of some kind, because then you always have the creative ability somehow blossoming.
I wish I could sing. I would do like opera star. Can't. I'm not going to subject you to that.
No. I like to pretend, but I don't know what it sounds like on the other end.
Let's not go there.
Let's not. Okay, so She's Up Theater has a Broadway musical review going on.
Another one? Didn't they just finish?
Well, they finished the Shakespeare.
Wow.
I know. It's going on all the time.
That's
there.
That's great.
If they're not in production of something, like if they're not doing the production, then they're building set for the production or rehearsing the production, or they're just going. Anyway, it's
fantastic.
They're doing a Broadway musical review on the 23rd, 24th in the evening and May 25th at 2. And it's a fundraiser, especially for building repairs. So you just can go in by donation.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's something that a lot
it's
of people
It's a great way to try a thing.
Would. Yeah.
If you're not committed, you know, try it. Go by donation and see how you like it. I guarantee you'll be back.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, that I love about events like this is that it's a sing-along. So if you know the words to some Broadway musicals, you can just belt it out.
A sing-along.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And people will just be okay with it.
I know. They pack the house with those things, don't they?
And you can really be bad and it doesn't
it's like
matter.
Group karaoke. It's karaoke without the embarrassment.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And without the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of us of a certain age just like to be able to sing without having to put ourselves in embarrassing situations.
Exactly.
Haney Heritage Park, having high tea.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So that's on Sunday, May 25th. They're doing sandwiches and tea and all the fun entertainment that goes along with high tea.
High tea.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. So you might have to wear a dress.
Yeah. Or a hat of some kind.
Oh, a hat for sure.
Possibly some gloves.
Oh, the white lacy gloves.
Yes.
Yeah, I would think so. That's another thing that you could bring all ages to.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Enjoy. Tickets are $25 and they're available at the Village or at Touch of Texas.
Touch of Texas.
Yep.
And it's a lovely way to spend an afternoon.
Yeah. And then I want to point out that this particular station is having a fundraising event on June 7th.
That's right. At the theater building.
Big show.
Yeah. A big show.
A very big show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Live at the theater.
Yeah. And it's using all the local talent that's involved with the radio station. And they've got food and they've got a silent auction going
mm-hmm.
on. And there's just like going to be a fast-paced, crazy showcase of music and storytelling and madness. And it's all to keep this community radio station going.
That's right. So vote with your dollars and be there. Help out if you can. It's wonderful to have this venue.
It is. So it's $20 for tickets. They're available here at the CKVS. They're available at Wicket Business Services. Or you can just call and reserve. And you can call 463-5026. To reserve tickets, that starts at 6:30 on Saturday, June 7th.
Saturday, June 7th.
Yeah. So, and I just, okay, here's going way back to the other topic.
Ooh,
I donated a painting for the silent auction.
Yes.
And that's something I do very rarely.
I understand.
Because I've been asked a lot to do such things. And eventually I had to develop a personal policy that I have 5 organizations that I believe very deeply and truly are important organizations I'm very passionate about, and I will donate my time and or product to those organizations, but I won't donate paintings to other groups that ask me that I don't have a connection
to.
Yeah,
you have to be connected.
Yeah.
Right.
And I give that
same advice.
And
don't do it for exposure.
No.
That's the other thing people say. Could you donate something? It would be good exposure.
Yeah, that's a lie.
Do it because it matters to you.
Yes. Do it because you believe in the group and you believe in what they're doing in
right.
the community.
Because at Play For It Publishing, we often donate books, but only to things that matter to us.
Yeah. You don't want to be one of a sea of things.
No.
Right?
No.
So I give that advice to everybody in all the arts. Same with musicians. I tell them, because they're asked a lot to play for the exposure for
all the time.
Various events. And I tell them, you know what? You can do that. You absolutely can. Just pick the organizations that you feel most passionately about and do it for them. Everybody else pays.
Yeah. And it's true. There has to be a fair exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is, I know this topic has come up before and has generated some feedback from the audience. If you're interested, go to Google and look up, should I work for free?
Oh.
It's a beautiful infographic about that. It's quite funny. But also very enlightening. Should I work for free?
Okay, that's very good.
Yeah, so because we know nothing is free.
Nothing is free. No. I mean, we talk about the Wednesday on the Wharf concerts being free,
not
and admission
free.
To the gallery is free, but it's not
no,
free.
It's paid
Somebody
for by
paying.
Someone else. It's called an open event. There's a difference. So
yes.
You, as a member of our community, you are. We are fortunate to have so many open events
mm-hmm.
and
accessible. Events.
Accessible,
yeah.
And if you'd like to be part of them, you know, help give back,
yeah.
please.
Yeah. Thank you for this amazing conversation today. That's been really fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm really going to, next topic, Bob and Doug would say, we're going to talk about original art.
Okay.
Okay.
Hoser.
Hoser. Good day.
Good day. So more information on arts events in the Shoe Swap can be found at the website, www.salmonarmartscenter.ca. Click on participate because it's all levels of participation that you're looking for in all the arts. And we list things by date. It's just a text file, so it's easy to navigate. And other information on other arts events can be found there. And lots of people have their own websites now. So my goodness, just check the internet if you're interested in any kind of genre. You can look at our Facebook page, Salmon Arm Arts Center, and I post things all the time there about the current exhibition and other various and sundries. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Artscape.